So, hey, everybody, this is Eric Mann. You're on with Voices from the Frontlines, your 4 o'clock drive time, walk time, bicycle time, public affairs hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. And joining me to talk about gentrification, race, and community organizing to fight back is Tom Dutton. He's a professor of architecture at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. Tom has also been an organizer involved with the Over the Rhine People's Movement for the last, 30 years. He's a founder and director of Miami University's Center for Community Engagement in Over the Rhine, something that he initiated. Over the Rhine is a low-income, mostly black community in the heart of Cincinnati. Tom recently wrote an insightful article that can be found at truthout.org called Do You Have a Sign? In the article, he describes the latest struggle for Over the Rhine residents to stop the Cincinnati City Council and a group of powerful corporations from pushing through plans to gentrify the community and push out many of its longtime residents. Nice to have you on the show, Tom.
Hey, hi, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been waging this fight for a long time. I mean, one of the things in your article, we'll start with the idea of putting down the flag, and the excellent analogy, if I can read it, says, what's now happening over the Rhine is not so different from comedian Eddie Izzard's satire about Great Britain's domination of the world through colonization. Quote, we stole countries, that's how you build an empire. We stole countries with the cunning use of flags, just sail around the world and stick a flag in them. Quote, I claim India for Britain. You can't claim us, we live here, 500 million of us. Do you have a flag? Now, if you just shift scales a bit to see the internal colonial mechanisms, machinations, of powerful corporations operating within a nation, it's not hard to extrapolate to see 3CDC playing the role of Great Britain and Over the Rhine. 3CDC, which you'll explain what it is in a minute, this public-private partnership, we claim Over the Rhine for middle and upper-class people. People of Over the Rhine, quote, you can't claim us. We live here. We've been building community for years, decades, really. You can't just come into this community, claim it for yourself and everybody out. 3CDC, do you have a sign? Do you have a flag? So, pretty good, Tom, pretty good. So, where'd you get that analogy?
Well, I love Eddie Izzard, you know, and if you, you ought to see the whole Dress to Kill album, and because it is a long story, he's just very funny, and it presents a long story about Great Britain's domination of the world through colonization. And, I've been in Over the Rhine, working there for a very, very long time. It just seemed to me that there was all these signs sponsored by 3CDC. I'll explain them in a sec. But these signs are popping up everywhere on development projects and on the vacant buildings, and this is the development project to come. 3CDC, just to put that on the table, it stands for 3Cs and a D and a C. It stands for Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, 3CDC. That's how they're understood. That's their website address. And it's a particular kind of corporation. It's not a typical kind of corporation in a way. It is the spearhead of corporate power in Cincinnati. And in that, pretty much all the most significant corporations in the city have some representation on its board. It's kind of a who's who of the corporate sector. And so it kind of grew up in 2003. With the blessing of the city, and it was charged with trying to target development in the downtown area and also Over the Rhine. And it's interesting that it formed in 2003 because in 2002 there was a big community planning process that brought forth the 2002 comprehensive plan for the community. And there's some good things in that plan, and it was overseen and was going to be managed by the Department of City Planning. But right after the city adopted that plan, they shut down the Department of City Planning. And it has now been reinstated, but there was a lull. And basically, the plan was shelved. And about a year later, 3CDC emerges and is basically carrying out all the development functions and planning functions that happen within Over the Rhine.
Well, one thing is interesting, Tom, is you know that in the pamphlet I wrote, Reconstructing Los Angeles from the Bottom Up, in 1992, as you know very well, Peter Ueberroth came in. We're now coming to the 20th anniversary of the Urban Rebellion. and developed this concept of public-private partnerships. And you have now, in your article, saying the generation of a new paradigm for urban development that addresses deep social questions will require these skills of problem solving, and they will not come easily. But where I got the wrong quote. The city has surrendered government to governance by public-private partnership. So the point is that these new corporate-dominated agencies essentially appropriate the role of government, right, and function in lieu of government. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, it isn't even really correct to say it's a public-private partnership. I mean, in a way, if we do want to use that term, and it's okay, I think, to use the term, but let's be clear about what it means, at least in the Cincinnati context, it means more or less corporate control of the government.
Right.
I mean, basically, it means, in a sense, that the corporate machinery is so powerful, and the corporate sector is so powerful that more or less cities, and this is happening everywhere. I mean, this is happening all across the United States and maybe elsewhere, that cities or municipalities, governmental functions are more or less adapting to the machinery of sort of the corporate structure. And so if it is a public-private partnership, it's pretty much the public underwrites the private, which is the corporate. And it's a very interesting body, this body. I mean, they wear two hats, and they wear these hats interchangeably whenever they want. On one time, sometimes they simply say, hey, we're just a development company. We're just a development company. We help, you know, with developers to try and do projects, or we try and do construction loans or something. We're just a development company. But then on the other hand, they wear a hat they're more like a quasi-public body. The city refers to them all the time. We tried to push this, and we did a little community plan through a participatory process, my students and I and others, and we went directly to the city. The city would go, oh, what does 3CDC think about this? Well, 3CDC is a private nonprofit entity. We're coming to you as a public entity that oversees all things planning and public. And they said, no, you got to take it to 3CDC to see what they think.
Well, let me ask you this, Tom. One of the things that you've been doing in working in Over the Rhine for 30 years, tell us about the actual number of people there, the racial composition from when you started to when it is now, and from there I have some questions.
Okay. Let me go back a little bit before when I started. I mean, the basic date to start with is right after the war, 1950. There were 30,000 people in Over the Rhine, nearly all white, up in the upper 90%. Today, there's maybe 7,500 people, mostly black. So Over the Rhine is a story about going from primarily a white space to a primarily black space. The median income in the community itself is about $10,000 a year. And and that's when I came on board in 1981, there was probably maybe 15,000 people there, and it was about 50-50 in terms of white-black. The population of other kinds of people of color, Latinos, Hispanic, they're pretty much non-existent over the line. It's pretty much a black-white situation.
Well, now, given that, you've done some really excellent exposure, and I urge people to, we'll tell you how to get the article again, about the Urban Land Institute, which is a quasi-liberal in the bad sense of liberal, very pro-corporate, almost mouthpiece for the developers. But here's the question. If you started with 30,000 people and you're down to 15,000 people, now you're down to 7,500 people, if the level of gentrification is so profound, and as you pointed out, the people removal, seeing the masses essentially as disposable, what's the strategy?
Well, that's a very good question, because there are people still there that, people have organized, and, they loosely affiliate themselves and call themselves the Over the Rhine People's Movement. But it did get started in the early 1970s, and they have mobilized actions and built institutions and organizations that are probably pretty typical across the country. They are against homelessness. They developed the second largest homeless shelter in the state. They're for affordable housing, nonprofit housing development corporations. There's cultural production and art and after-school music programs at the Peasley Neighborhood Center. There's political action arms and various other kinds of organizations. They work together as much as they can, but they're also somewhat autonomous from time to time. So it's kind of a loose ensemble of organizations that are oriented towards need, trying to meet the needs of those most vulnerable and those most oppressed and exploited. And so that's kind of the history of the movement. And like I said, I signed on in 1981. I tend to bring students down there because I teach in the university. I teach architecture. And we got onto something pretty important in 1996 when we started doing design build work, and that's exactly what it sounds like and what it means, that architecture students would work on the buildings that were owned by the nonprofit that we primarily work with. They're called Over the Rhine Community Housing. Their mission is to try and put units back online for low and moderate income people. That's their mission, good social justice cause. And we have worked primarily on their property to try and help them put units back online. Architecture students design and rehabilitate, you know, units for these kinds of people that need it. So we've had a strong presence in the neighborhood trying to bring students to that location. And then in about 10 years after that, after the center had been up for a couple few years, we started something that we called the Over the Rhine Residency Program, where we now have every fall semester, and we've done it 6 times now, we have Miami students who are mostly from privileged and suburban small-town backgrounds. They come and live in that community full-time, take all their courses down there. They come from all majors. And while architecture students do design build work about 30, 40 hours a week, teachers in the teacher ed program are working full-time doing their student teaching in the inner city school down there, the elementary school. Social workers are working with social work people, anthropologists. We had an anthropologist a year ago who wanted to be a doctor. He was in a healthcare facility, all these kinds of things. So we're trying to do community assistance. And then the students bring a lot of energy, and we put them to use getting involved in various kind of community campaigns that are run by the organizers in the neighborhood.
Well, this is Eric Mann, your host on Voices from the Frontline. We're talking to Tom Dutton, one of the really best university-based, community-based organizers coming out of academia, who is, say, Tom and Robin Kelly and very few others really would fit in this situation. And Tom has actually built roots, I mean, spends a lot of his time in Cincinnati, in this community called Over the Rhine, working with students. I guess one of the questions that we have a mutual partner, and Leanne Hurst Mann, who is both my wife and Tom's partner in many writing projects, such as their book Reconstructing Architecture. And in Leanne's master's thesis, she said, you know, fundamentally, architecture is about the struggle over property and land. So, not that she invented it, but she, you know, it was still
right.
It was still pretty good. She went to, I believe, Harry Magdoff and went from Monopoly Beren and Sweezy's Monopoly Capitalism. That was the first master's thesis they got like that. So you two have both been working a lot about trying to expose the fact that fundamentally the class struggle over land and property is at the heart of what's called architecture. Now, given that, one of the dilemmas has been, so your work has been really incredible, Tom. I mean, you and Leanne have really cut, in my opinion, the best kind of movement kind of conversation. But here's the dilemma. In a capitalist system, as we know, that land is owned primarily by people who can afford a lot of land, poor people don't own property, let alone land. The biggest fight has been traditionally the so-called community benefits agreements, which I have mixed feelings about, but those have been essentially saying you can build the Staples Center, you can build this new hotel, but please at least have a community center for the poor, have a homeless shelter. Have you even been able to get that? And how do you go beyond, so what do you think of community benefits agreements, and how do you go beyond them?
Well, that's a good question. And Cincinnati in particular. Cincinnati is a very conservative city. They want to let the market run, and they think that all social benefits come from letting the market run. The idea of having any kind of government intrusion into, even in a terms of a benefit agreement or, you know, fees, you know, I know that they're doing this all over the place, and it's really terrific from one point of view, that as you build new commercial office buildings in the middle of San Francisco, say, I'm sure that they have linkage fees that get tied to nonprofit housing development corporations and so forth to build housing for real need.
Right.
I mean, so we can't even get to that point. It's very, very difficult. I mean, even something as based as simple as inclusionary zoning, where you even have private developers, you know, as a part of your development deal, you have to provide some percentage, 10, 15, 20, not very much, 20% of units in your development that need to go for affordable. Now, 3CDC actually is, in their most recent project that's going to break ground soon, they will have some units of, quote, affordable. That's 60% of area median income, but that's still a fair amount of money. That's $36,000-$40,000 in income. Cincinnati, it's kind of maybe a little bit bigger than what you can get in, or how far that would take you in a New York or a Los Angeles context. But so they're going to have some small percentage of rental in their projects, in that project. But right now there's a lot of plea bargaining on the part of nonprofits to try and get a little bit more crumbs from the city and to underwrite their operations and things like that. And it's just a little bit more especially difficult in a place like Cincinnati because of its conservatism, because they really don't want to have any fettering in the market at all.
Well, we're going to almost tie up, Tom. So a couple of thoughts on my part. I mean, one of the things is, you know, you've also pointed out to me, Cincinnati is a very southern city, that part of its culture is, as you say, it's both a free enterprise culture, but it's also there's a lot of white racism. And one of the things I think is very important, though, and I want to go back to the end of the article, is that two things that I think are particularly amazing. One we'll talk more about is that you're the founder and director of Miami University's Center for Community Engagement and Over the Rhine, which is a whole story in itself of how you got the university to agree to that, how you've done that work. And secondly, as I told you, you know, through an email, I think this is one of your best kind of theoretical, analytical, strategic articles that really frames the question so well. So in the 1.5 minutes you have left, how do people find out about your work, the different places, the Miami University Center for Community Engagement? How do they get this article? How do they get in touch with you?
Well, we are on the web. It's if you were to Google the Center for Community Engagement over the Rhine, you will eventually find it. The article is on truthout.org. It was originally posted January 15th of this year. So that's easy I think there's my information there. I'm at Miami University, which is in Ohio, not Florida.
Great.
People make a mistake on that sometimes. So Miami University of Ohio. I'm in the Department of Architecture and Interior Design.
Tom, that's going to end it. It's okay. Really great having you on the show. We'll do it again.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
Take good care. Well, my friends, that ends today's program of Voices from the Frontlines. This is your host, Eric Mann.